Hi guys, welcome to the 12th episode of the Untitled Gadget Podcast. This is your host Dhruv here with Arish and Akshay. And we've got some good stuff happening this week and a lot more in the world of gaming. So this might actually be more of a gaming podcast than mobile and general tech. And of course, we're going to spice it up with our take on everything else and everything else that we've been doing, things that we've been reading, things that we've been listening to, etc., etc. You know, keeping it entertaining as usual. So without further ado, let's go. Guys, how's it going? How are you doing this week?
Yeah,
it's going well. I'm actually just waiting for the first topic to start off, and I'm waiting for Harish to just take off. I'm actually waiting
for that. Okay, let's do that then.
Let's do that.
So our first topic is there's an interesting news story that, you know, Xiaomi has been capturing browser data even when you're in incognito mode. And that's the basic gist of it, but I'm going to let Harish, you know, give you the complete lowdown on it and then outrage on it the way that only Harish can.
We're going to get a gangster style right now.
It's easy. I mean, this is your straightforward, some cybersecurity researcher saw something that he shouldn't have on his phone, so he dug in and then found that the Xiaomi phone that he was using was sending data even from incognito mode to a remote server. Now, that should not be the case. And then he talked to a journalist from Forbes, and then the story was published and predictably led to a lot of backlash. Now, usually when something like this occurs, the brand puts out a clarifying statement and then says, here's what we're actually doing. And if they're actually at fault, they would go ahead and say, okay, this is what we've been doing and that's wrong, so we'll do something differently this time. Now, what Xiaomi is doing here instead is coming out and saying that whatever that security researcher found was false and that they're not doing anything of that sort whatsoever. And their statement, weirdly enough, does not go and address the flaws that he found in that post, but instead randomly says that user data from users in India lives on an India server. That was not the issue, first of all. That wasn't what he pointed out. The whole issue revolved around the whole incognito mode tracking, and they didn't really address that. And that leads me to worry, because if they're just putting this out as false news, they're not really addressing the issue and then just brushing it off.
Yeah, so I was looking up on stuff online, and I came across a few tweets where the researcher or one of the guys who cracked the code and who posted the source code said that, you know, like the Mi browser was basically logging all the keywords and the URLs even in incognito mode, which kind of defeats the purpose of using incognito mode, because, you know, the reason why people use that is because they don't want their search terms to be used for advertisement or whatever, you know, for tracking basically later on, so that Google or any other platform shows you ads, and maybe for other nefarious purposes, you never know. The problem is that, you know, like the data that was being collected in incognito mode was being sent to Xiaomi servers, and that was the issue.
Yeah, I think, I mean, just generally, it's fairly unethical that, you know, that the very definition of an incognito mode is that nothing should be tracked. And there's really no way to spin this around. It is wrong, exactly, just what they've been doing.
I mean, what's even more egregious is that they're also keylogging, and there's clear evidence of that in that post. Sure, the Forbes article was, you know, it wasn't entirely accurate in all areas, because it made a lot of allegations to where the data was stored and all that. Sure, it may not have been presented the best way, but if you look at what the security researcher did on his own, then there's clear evidence that these guys have been logging keystrokes and tracking behavior in incognito mode. And that is plainly evident. And they haven't addressed that at all. In, I think I've received 3 statements thus far. None of the 3 statements address that issue at all.
But I don't know, Harish, tell me this. Are you even surprised by this?
No, not really. I mean, it's not like, sure, this is Xiaomi. This week, the headlines are dominated by Xiaomi. A month or so, it'll be somebody else. At this point, it's common practice in the industry now to do this sort of thing. And I mean, we'll be outraged now. And then next week, it'll be business as usual. Xiaomi will roll out phones. We'll all buy them. It doesn't even make sense.
I mean, all said and done, you know, I think there's a lot of outrage against Xiaomi, like you said, but it's practically every brand which is doing this outside of maybe Google with their first-party phones, but who knows with even those, you know. Data is pretty much the business model behind a lot of these low-cost phones, and realistically, like, why would this stop in incognito mode either? Considering...
See, that's the problem here. Everyone does this, but everyone also says that they're doing this. When Google says that they're collecting your data, they actually spell it out very clearly what they're collecting. They're very upfront about it, and they tell you that the data that they're using is for serving ads, and it doesn't leave their servers.
Mm-hmm.
And that was missing in this case, because they're sidestepping the issue, basically. They're not admitting that they're doing this, and that is what is... the bigger issue here, because if they came out and said, yeah, we're doing all this, here's what we're doing with that data, it's stored here, we don't have access to it, that would have been fine. But they're not even acknowledging that they have the problem, and that is the issue.
If they would have given a proper explanation of why they're doing this and what it actually does, maybe it would have helped them in this situation. But to be honest, no matter what they did, it wouldn't really have helped them. You know, when the report first came out, I think we were discussing this before we started recording. I didn't really cover it because the source that it came from Forbes, and if you read tech news on a regular basis, you know that Forbes is quite shady in terms of you know, their coverage for certain topics.
Yeah.
Although,
if it comes from the Forbes blogs, which are those authors aren't necessarily.
Yeah.
Employees, so you know, it could be any.
They aren't employees. They're just like freelancers who just contribute to Forbes. But although when I look deeper into this, there's a guy called Cyber Gibbons on Twitter. Look at his tweets. He's actually given quite a few details on how Xiaomi's doing this. But then again, initially my thought was, you know, this is just another Gordon Kelly story. If you don't know what I mean, just check out my Twitter, you'll know. And I ignored it, you know, right? But this really blew up, I think, today when yesterday, 20 hours ago, when this Twitter handle Cyber Gibbons started showing proof of the source code and what was actually happening. So yeah, I mean, yeah, it's quite a legit story. It's just that, unfortunately, it came out of a source that I didn't really trust.
Yeah, Forbes is self-serving, so it wasn't probably the best outlet to uncover something like this. But that's correct. The security researcher actually knows what he's doing. And there's clear evidence that Xiaomi is... doing underhanded things with its browser. Now, will this lead anywhere? No, it won't. Will anybody care after a week or so? No, they won't. Will we go back to recommending Redmi phones? Yes, we will. What is the point of all this? It's that at this point, we're all paying for everything with our data, and that should come as no surprise to anyone.
Yeah, I think beyond that, all that we can hope for and ask for is a bit of transparency. That where exactly our data is going, and hey, if you're taking our data, you might as well just admit it, you know.
Yeah,
these shady tactics don't really work out, are not a very good look for the brand.
They don't need to do this. They could have come out. I mean, they're a brand that's loved by the community, right? They go on and on about their community ethos and the fact that they care about their users first and foremost, and then something like this comes along.
Yeah. Okay, so that was Xiaomi this week. And, do you want to talk about Motorola first? Or do we head on to the gaming section?
Oh, let's talk about the Motorola.
Okay, cool. So that's got Harish excited, clearly. Motorola's come out with a new phone, which is pretty much their first flagship in quite some time. And it's coming to India. And it looks exciting. It looks as exciting as a Motorola can get.
Maybe.
So, do you guys want to take this forward, Harish?
Yeah. Now that I think about it, I'm not entirely sure it will come to India, but it makes sense considering they launched the Razer here for like a lakh and something, lakh 25,000.
Oh, they still haven't launched it yet.
It's going on sale tomorrow.
Hey, blame the lockdown for that.
So, yeah, but it still didn't happen.
Oh, right, the lockdown is extended. Well, I look forward to that press release. Anyway, the Motorola Edge Plus. It is called the Edge Plus, right?
It is.
I mean...
Yeah, okay. For a second, okay. It's their first high-end phone. And this is very exciting because I really liked Motorola phones in the past. I was a fan of the Moto X series and then the Moto Z for all of its downsides with the battery life and all. It was a fantastic phone. So I was a huge fan of the Moto G series as well. I recommended that shit to all of my family members. But then Lenovo took over and it turned Motorola into a white label. Churning out all these shitty Moto G phones that don't get any updates. So now it's exciting to see them tackle the high-end segment. And from the early reviews, it looks like the phone is actually pretty decent. It has that waterfall display. It has high-end internals. And it has that clean software that Motorola phones have been known for. But the one downside is that because Motorola is now owned by Lenovo, it's only committing to one platform update. So you're paying somewhere around 75,000 for a phone that will get one update to Android 11. That's it.
Basically, it's going to be useless.
Yeah, I mean, Motorola has fallen so far, right? 3 years ago, it would have been the first to roll out updates and consistently delivered security and platform updates to all of its devices. And now look, it doesn't make any promises beyond one update.
How much did you say this was? $700?
It's a $1,000 phone.
No, it's a $1,000 phone. In the US.
I'm going to give you a prediction right now. It's dead on arrival.
Of course. I mean,
it is actually. You know, there's quite a few reasons for that.
I don't think anyone cares about Motorola phones anymore. The Razer was great, but that had its own set of issues. I never really cared about Motorola phones after those budget phones that were really great in the initial Flipkart days when people used to buy it all the time. That's what started the budget segment movement. Now it's just boring phones, man. Just like it's the Nokia situation all over again.
Like I'll be honest. Like one of the key selling points for Motorola in the recent years was their clean software build. But for $1,000, when you have a OnePlus phone next to it, this thing doesn't have an IP rating. It looks exceedingly boring from the back. It looks like a $200 phone. Like it's
okay. Does it have wireless charging?
It does not have wireless charging, as far as I can see.
Fuck that. There's no way. There's no way this phone is worth $1,000, man. What are the cameras?
No, the cameras are actually good, and it has wireless charging.
It does? Well, okay.
It has wireless charging. Okay. It doesn't have fast charging on the same level as other brands. I think it's still that 18.
It has 8. Yeah, PD.
Yeah.
You mean wired?
Wired is 18 watts.
That's fine.
Okay. But see, nobody's going to be interested in it other than folks in the US where it's going on sale on Verizon. But it is interesting that they're trying to go down this route. I don't know what's going to go down with Motorola because at this point, nobody really cares about them outside the US. In the US, they're still seen as this budget brand because they don't have many devices.
That's just stupid.
Yeah. Okay, well, that summed it up.
To be fair, it is going against OnePlus 8 Pro, and I'll be very honest, everything is working against this phone. OnePlus 8 Pro has a great software experience. I don't know about the cameras, how good it is on the Motorola, but OnePlus 8 Pro should be a little better. It's got fast wireless charging, it's got fast wired charging,
so
it looks damn sexy.
You're right. But at least on paper, it has the 108 megapixel Samsung camera, so you never know. It might actually be
I don't know how Motorola's team are working on the camera.
That's true.
I don't know. I mean,
no, they actually made the cameras really good on this one. I think this is the first Motorola phone with a great camera, and that's why I was excited.
See, I'll tell you why I don't trust it. When reviews come out of the States and when they say OnePlus has a great camera, that's when I like, fuck you, bitch, it's not great, it's horrible. When we get the phone, right? So same with Motorola. I'm seeing the US review, they say it's great. It's great. I'm going to get the phone here. Fuck you, bitch. It's not great. I can't even take a decent picture of a lamp. So, no.
Wow. Akshay, that came out of nowhere, man.
Yeah, man. I mean, I just get annoyed by these things, man. They tell you some shit over there, and when it comes to us, they're like, no, this is not what we like. It shows what priorities are and what we think about cameras and what they think about cameras, right? And for them, it's a great picture because they just walk out, you know, to the park and take a decent picture. But here we have pollution and stuff, right? So we have to see. Then you have to really test the cameras and see which one's good and which one's not good.
Yeah.
And I really don't like the OnePlus cameras at all.
Pollution is the great equalizer.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, that's great. Akshay, you're clearly very enthusiastic about this topic. But yeah, I think before we move ahead, I think it's like, you know, final thoughts on the Moto Edge Plus. I think it's a great phone for the US market, not so much for anywhere else where there are a lot of other options available as well. That's pretty much it. Like, I mean, in India, if this thing is 70,000, 75,000...
Dead on arrival.
It is dead on arrival. Like, there's no two ways about it. Even if it's a good phone, because why would you spend an extra 10,000 or 15,000?
Wait, did you hear? The iQOO 3 is now 35,000. So, wow.
Wow. Very yeah, exciting.
No, it's not going to work anywhere. It's a dumb thing.
All right. So, that's pretty much it for mobile tech for this week. And there wasn't that much and it was a bit boring. But with that out of the way, let's get on to the exciting stuff.
Right, thanks, Amod. Bye.
There's a lot that has happened in the world of gaming. Some good, some not so good. There's been a lot of leaks around The Last of Us 2. I am not excited about that. Well, I'm excited about the game, but I haven't clued in. I'm not clued into the leaks, and I hope Akshay is not going to tell me those anyway. And then after that, we have Assassin's Creed Valhalla, which should get Harish all excited.
Woohoo!
And finally, we're going to have a bit more on Microsoft's big event. Let's get started. Akshay, you know everything about The Last of Us 2. Well, everything from the leaks. What can you tell us and what can you not tell us and what you shouldn't tell us?
So I'm not going to talk any spoiler here because it'll ruin the game for people. Trust me, even I tried to avoid it, but people started posting memes and shit everywhere. So eventually I got to know what happened in the game. But I'm not going to tell it here because experiencing the game yourself is completely different from looking at leaks. On the other hand, though, major pivotal moments from the game were leaked on Reset Era forums and everywhere else. From there, it went on YouTube and everywhere else. And that forced Naughty Dog to come out with a new release date for The Last of Us Part 2. Initially, it was indefinite, but now they're coming on June 9th, something like that. I'm not sure. In some first week of June. Oh, no. Something like that. I don't know. I forget the date.
I think it's 17th. They were forced to... Is it? I mean, it's within a day of Ghost of Tsushima.
No, Ghost of Tsushima got pushed to the month after. Yeah. Yeah, because of these leaks, Last of Us 2 has a new release date. Ghost of Tsushima got pushed to the month after. And Sony was basically in damage control mode for the past 1 week. And today they found out who actually did it. But they're not telling anyone who leaked the game. They're probably going to sue his ass for millions of dollars. But yeah, basically it ruined the game for a lot of people. And people are pissed, man. Some people are pissed. Some people are like, fuck it. I'm still going to buy the game.
Yeah, Last of Us 2 is... June 19th.
What leaked though?
Key pivotal moment. I can't tell you what exactly happens in those videos. Basically, videos leaked and a lot of the plot via text format. It got leaked and that spread like wildfire on Twitter and on Reddit everywhere.
Yeah, I think it's about an hour and a half of gameplay, right?
What the fuck? Really?
I don't think it's gameplay. I don't think it's gameplay. It's key cutscenes where some real emotional shit happen. And it was basically leaked on Naughty Dog put out a statement and people were posting spoilers on their replies. That's which is when I told you to stay away from the internet.
But back up a bit. What is the deal with The Last of Us and why should I give a fuck?
Okay. The first Last of Us game was probably the pinnacle of storytelling in video games. The plot of that game is probably better than any movie you've seen in the past 10 years.
Hey man.
That game made me cry and I don't cry in fucking movies or anything like that.
So I disagree with you over there. I mean, I personally thought it was a great story. I agree on all of that front, on all those fronts. But I feel that the game is also a bit overhyped. I mean, the storyline is like any... It's like The Walking Dead. You know, like take
is
take
the story
no,
line?
Take the storyline. Zombies.
It's not, so the best part about Last of Us is actually it's not really about the zombies. It's not about the apocalyptic situation the world is going through. It's actually about this relationship between Ellie and that this dude that comes and takes her across the country and their relationship between each other and what they go through together. It's not about what zombies they're trying to avoid. It's about Joel and Ellie and the relationship they have. It's like a father-daughter relationship.
Father and daughter dynamics set in the backdrop of a zombie situation. Apocalypse. Which is, again, straight from The Walking Dead. Rick
yeah,
and his kid.
Is,
I don't know,
Walking
man.
Dead is,
doesn't get me excited.
Yeah, it doesn't get me excited. I mean, you have to play it to experience it. It is actually really good. What there's some key moments in that game that actually fucking breaks your heart, man. You get attached to certain characters and then something happens. Something out of the blue happens. So it is sort of predictable, but the way the voice acting has been carried out, the way the scenes have been set up, is just a great experience, you know. It's nothing new for people who've been into, zombie genre, but it is great storytelling. And similarly, that's what people were expecting from Last of Us Part 2. Great storytelling. It didn't matter what zombies were there and what fucking arrows you throw and what guns you can use. It was a story that mattered. People were attached to the story and key pivotal moments got leaked, which was the basis of the game, right?
Mm.
So Akshay, like without getting into specific spoilers, you know, like I'm hearing that there have been drastic changes to the pacing of the storyline. Is that correct?
How do I say this without spoiling anything?
Yes or no?
yeah.
Okay.
Everything has changed. The game is slow as fuck.
It's a very complicated answer. Yes, it does change the pacing of the game, but they've taken a decision that nobody really wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can't say what decision they've taken because then it'll spoil the game.
They put Adam Sandler in the game.
No, it's just that the game is moving away from the roots of the first part of the game.
Okay.
Whatever I explained about the first part of the game, right? It's moving away from that. I'll say it in a way that in the first game there's the father-daughter dynamic relationship, right? They're kind of moving away from that.
But don't you think that's fair enough? That game came out in what, like 2012, 13? It was at the end of the PS3 era. They've built, like, you know, they've devved this game over the entire PS4 generation. Like, we're coming to the end of the PlayStation 4. The PlayStation 5 is right around the corner. And
I knew this was coming.
And I think it's fair, you know, like that. At this point, 8 years down the line, the kid has grown up.
I have to stop you there because in order to tell you why, I have to spoil the game, which is why let's not go there. Because if we go there, I'll end up saying something that people don't want to hear. And whatever you're saying is correct. I understand what you're trying to say. They have to evolve. But the way they evolve in this game is something that even I don't want.
Okay.
And if I say anything more, then, you know, I'm not talking about the political stuff in the game. There are some political stuff in the game. I don't know how to say this, but some people don't like, the people are calling it that it's a social justice warrior kind of a thing in this game. But
fine.
That's not what I'm
so
talking
let's,
about.
So let's put a bookmark
that,
here.
I'm not talking about that. That's fine with me. I'm completely open to that. It's something else in this game that I really didn't want to do, but I have to do it.
Fine. We are going to set a reminder for this. Of course we are. We're going to be revisiting this once the game is out. And I think we're going to be having quite a spirited discussion around The Last of Us Part 2.
June 19th. It's on. You don't have a PlayStation.
Oh, it's on the play. We shouldn't have bothered. Come on. Let's talk about the next thing.
Or you can try out PlayStation Now, you know.
Yeah, you can get PlayStation Now and then play it on your PC.
Really? That's a thing that works?
Yeah. Yeah,
reliable.
I mean, just check the latency.
For you it will be reliable. For you it will be reliable.
They have servers in India?
No, only for you.
Huh.
They do. Not that many, but they do.
So weird.
Cool.
Even if it's Singapore, latency is not that bad.
All right. Over to the next one. The one where we can actually talk quite a bit, and that's the new Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Taking a bit of inspiration from God of War and a lot of inspiration from the TV show Vikings. It's coming up.
The guy looks exactly like the guy, man. The guy looks exactly like the main character.
And the voice actor for the lead character is the guy from the Last Kingdom, which is another Vikings show.
Yeah. What, really? Yeah. Who is
this? I can't pronounce his name. But yeah, so the game comes out this holiday season, which is sometime around December 2020, and it's going to be a cross-gen title. And it's basically Vikings coming and attacking, well, what was the United Kingdom, I suppose.
Northumbria.
Northumbria. And Wessex. King Alfred of Wessex.
And there's some Norway or Finland? Norway. They show a little bit of Norway as well.
Because that's where they were from, right?
Yeah, yep. They did an additional video with the developers and they show a little bit of that as well.
So there's going to be a bit of mythology as well with, of course, there's going to be Odin and there's going to be ravens and all that stuff. So with the basics out of the way, what do you guys think about this?
I love it. Like I said a few weeks ago, I like the direction that they've taken with Odyssey. And what was the game before it?
Origins.
Yeah, I like the whole RPG take on this series. That was a welcome shift away because it was getting kind of boring, the same old format. So, and I also like the fact that they took a break for a year and then came out with this. I feel that that was warranted. And I think we're getting a better game for it.
For me, it's ticking all the right boxes. You know what we discussed two episodes ago, that I want it to be brutal. I want to see them pillaging England. I want to see them, you know, being drugged out of their mind when they're trying to loot and, you know, kill people. You can see hints of that. I don't want a lot of mythology, and the developer said that they are quite confident that comparisons between God of War and this one is not going to bother them because it's not as heavy on mythology as the other game. But yeah, that little bit of mythology is there. And my favorite feature that they confirmed is going to have rap battles in the game, or, you know, it's called flighting, the ancient word for it, where they insult each other with, you know, in verses. So it's kind of like ancient rap battles, and they have that in the game as a side activity. So I'm kind of excited what this game is going to be about. But it looks beautiful. The trailer was 4 minutes long. I don't remember the last time I saw a trailer that was 4 minutes long. And it just looked, you know, fantastic. It looked fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is the game that has me most excited this year. Sure, there's Last of Us, there's Ghost of Tsushima, etc., and Cyberpunk.
Cyberpunk, man.
But I don't know, man. Like, this is the game that's gotten me, like, super enthusiastic. The setting is great. There's so much room for experimentation in the storyline and in the battle mechanics. And I like the fact that they're mixing it up with a bit of... I mean, they are really going full in with the RPG elements. The fact that you can now set up your own settlement and get some barracks going on, train your soldiers, hire soldiers to come and fight with you. That entire strategy element of the game, you know, this is what I like about Assassin's Creed now. I never really got into the original games. There was something off about it for me, but I always enjoyed the story setting of it. And they finally mixed up the story setting with proper open world RPG elements, which just works and flows beautifully.
Yeah.
Although I have to say, I do like the older games, but yes, I'm digging the new setting as well, the origin and, you know, basically the ancient lore of Assassin's Creed. But I have to say that when I was watching the trailer, for a second I forgot that this was an Assassin's Creed game.
Yeah.
You know, like, it looked like a normal role-playing game to me, but until the very end of the trailer, you could see him putting his hidden blade right through the face of that Roman dude or whatever he was. So that, I think that last moment was like, yes, the hidden blade is back, and yes, this is an Assassin's Creed game, even though it doesn't look like it. So yeah, I do want to see those older game mechanics such as the hidden blade and everything, assassinations in this game, but I don't know how that's going to be. Of course, it's set in the Assassin's Creed
universe
story,
yeah.
So you don't know how they implement it. But yeah, I mean, apart from that, I just want the game to have a great story, to be honest. If it's not a great story, it doesn't really matter what your world is. I mean, I've seen like Final Fantasy VII Remake, right? It's a semi-open world, but the story is great. That's why I love that game. So that's what I want.
Yeah, I mean, I think somehow they really managed to nail the pacing as well, even with Origins. That game does require a bit of grinding, but, you know, all the side missions, the part where you have to, you know, level up, it's never tedious. There'll be, you know, maybe a little bit where you'll feel that, hey, I don't want to go around collecting more hide or whatever anymore, but it's still enjoyable.
Odyssey was a little tedious, though. Like, where I have to go deliver someone's laundry and shit. I didn't like that.
I mean, it's not as tedious as Syndicate and all. That game was just derivative. It did nothing for me.
That game was broken, and it's broken till today, by the way.
Didn't like that one.
It's still broken. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, I understand what you're saying, but, by the way, what one thing that you will both will love is that they've got you can dual-wield weapons,
mm-hmm.
right? Now you can, you can dual-wield any weapon on either of the hands. One, you can have a sword, you can have a dagger on the other hand. Both of them don't have to be the same weapon now.
And you could have two shields as well, if you want.
You can have two shields, but yeah, I don't know how you're going to progress, but... Yeah.
Oh, you could be a shield maiden.
Yes. Now there's a way to play the game.
But I like the fact that Ubisoft has put in extra, like they've given extra flexibility to players to play however they want. That's what a true RPG game is, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm looking forward to blasting some Amon Amarth and playing the game later this year.
Yeah.
So what's next? On the 7th, we've got a Microsoft event coming up where they're supposed to be showing off a bunch of games. There's going to be mostly third-party games. At least that's what the rumor suggests. And there will be another. There's expected to be another event sometime next month where Microsoft will show off their first-party games. Akshay, do you have any insights into this?
Yeah. So what has been confirmed so far? We're definitely going to see gameplay for Assassin's Creed Valhalla. We're definitely going to see more gameplay for Cyberpunk 2077, and maybe other partnerships that Microsoft has done with third-party developers, and we'll see more gameplay for that and how next gen will look like for these games. There might be some surprises that we don't know of. There might be some games that we knew about and we just gonna see it for the first time,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, in action, to be honest. And if they do, I have a feeling they might show one first-party game just to keep things exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to see some new Halo Infinite. If I get to see that, that would be awesome.
Yeah, probably some sort of a teaser for the bigger event which they've got lined up, I guess.
No. I've seen enough teasers for Infinite. I want to see some actual shit now.
Hey, talking about teasers, where the heck is Sony? They're not even teasing anything at this point.
Let's not get started on that. That's gonna take up the entire podcast, and Harish is gonna doze off. Right, Harish?
What are we talking about?
Like, where is Sony, man? I mean, Microsoft is just going, like, Sony. It's just sending out those, you know, press releases and the showing of games. They're doing online events. And Sony, the last thing we heard was the controller. That's it.
But a blog post for a controller.
Dual-tone controller.
And I mean, the fact that they've been staying so secretive, a game leaked behind their backs. What the hell are they doing?
What game leaked? Oh, this is their game.
Oh, God, Harish. This is like that, you know, watching the entire Ramayana and asking who the fuck was Sita. Right?
Sure. But Harish, here's a question for you. So with the next generation of consoles coming up, and obviously, you know, the next generation of games coming up alongside with it, as a PC gamer, does something get you excited here?
In terms of games?
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of games are generally held back to a certain degree because they also have to be, you know, ported over to consoles, or majority of the sales might be on consoles. Right. With consoles getting a huge power bump this generation, a lot of those constraints probably won't be there anymore. So what sort of impact do you expect on PC gaming?
I think this will be huge because for the longest time, the only reason games were held back on PC were because they needed to maintain parity with consoles. And we're finally at a point where consoles will now have the same power as PCs because the Xbox Series X basically looks like a PC. So I think we're going to see a lot of interesting changes. Obviously, ray tracing is going to be the big visual change, because that will immediately make a difference to how everything will look in a game. More realistic lighting, better shadows, better textures, that sort of thing. So yeah, it should be interesting, and we will also get to see better frame rates across the board, fingers crossed. But I still feel like it will be several years down the line where game engines actually take full advantage of the horsepower that's available. So I think we may not see a lot of changes this year or next, but down the line, this will definitely lead to games with better visuals, more lifelike visuals. That's it. I said visuals far too many times.
I think the biggest change will be in terms of load times, man, because we're going to see bigger worlds and we're going to see them load right away as soon as you walk in front of an environment, and you don't have to wait for loading screens anymore. I think that's going to be the biggest difference.
Yeah.
Not in terms of graphically in the beginning, but the loading times are going to be the, like, for example, Valhalla is going to be a massive game. Cyberpunk is going to be a massive game.
Yeah.
And loading these environments takes time, right? But on the new consoles with those SSDs in play and the new chipsets in play, it will be a lot faster. And subsequently, when these games are ported over for PC, we're going to get to take the same advantage.
Right. I totally forgot about the SSD. I mean, it's crazy that SSDs are a thing now on consoles when they've been like a mainstay on PCs for, I don't know, how long now?
The smart thing Xbox is doing is that if you buy, let's say, Assassin's Creed Valhalla and Cyberpunk on that console, let's say on Xbox One today, they have this thing called Smart Delivery. The next gen version of that game will be available for free as an upgrade on the Series X. I love that. It's not going to be like the Xbox One version of the game playing on Series X. It's going to be the Series X version. You just get a free upgrade. That's just awesome.
Do we have clarity of if that's going to work with physical discs as well?
I don't know. It should work, to be honest, because it's just a matter of a digital license when you insert a disc and it installs off the disc, and it still uses the hard drive anyway to put the base game in it. So I think it's on the disc as well. I'll have to get back on that.
Yeah, I'm hoping that Sony's going to do something similar, because at this point, you know, it's kind of established that at least on the digital services front, Microsoft's really been winning the game, especially with Game Pass.
I should tell you this.
Yep.
They have 10 million subscribers on Game Pass.
Well, they have one less now because I unsubscribed.
Yeah, well, that's fine. But they are really, really killing it with that subscription service. PS Now is nowhere close.
Yeah, and Sony really needs to catch up on that front.
So.
Yeah, they need to, man. They're just dropping the ball.
I shall be the evangelist for PS Now, considering Game Pass did not work for me at all.
No, man. You just had... You need to go through it.
Hey, I have two high-end systems in my house. It worked on neither, okay?
You downloaded the wrong file. Something must have gone wrong.
I downloaded it from Microsoft. If
did
it's
you try turning
on
it on
machine,
and off?
Yeah, I did. I did it several times.
You have to... I think they have the Game Pass app on the Xbox website, not on the Microsoft website.
Yeah, it was on the Xbox website. That's where I downloaded it from. And then it wasn't on one machine. It was on two machines.
I don't know, man. Something
with different accounts.
Damn. Try it on a laptop and see.
And do what with it?
That's true. I've told you an alternative, right? Which website to go.
PS Now.
Do that.
And all about the fitness.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Now that we're almost done with the topic of PC gaming and the future of PC gaming, because of consoles. That got complicated real quick. Harish, you going to talk about some of Intel's new stuff?
Sure, why not? Look, this this came...
Because you were the only one in that briefing.
Yeah, it was...
I skipped it for a reason.
Oh my God.
And we'll get to that soon.
It was a fun briefing. And so Intel, for basically those that haven't read about it, and not a lot of folks have, Intel launched its 10th generation Comet Lake S series, and the S in that means it's the desktop series. So this is a big deal for them because they've been hammered in this segment by AMD over the last 2-3 years, and they really haven't been able to do much. They are not going to be able to switch to the 10nm or 7nm node for the foreseeable future because they're just not able to get yields on it. So they're still cranking out designs on the 14 nanometer node. that has been their strategy for several years now. Their initial plan was to switch over to a more efficient node several years ago, but they just could not make that work. So now what they're positioning is a more efficient, slightly more efficient design, because you can only take things so much on the same node. But they're now promoting frequency as being like this big differentiator for their series. So now you get the i9-10900K, and that thing goes up to like 5.3 gigahertz. It's an unlocked CPU, and it's using the thermal velocity boost to hit 5.3 gigahertz. And they're saying, oh, because it goes so high, you will see a difference in gaming and things like that.
And that's on two cores, right?
No. Yeah, it's on. Yeah, it doesn't go. The turbo core high boost frequency is around 4.8. Still okay, but yeah, they're positioning it as like a thing that can hit 5 gigahertz in stable. So
I might get this, because for me, the 14 nanometer fabrication process fits my motherboard. So I may just get this when I want to upgrade. But I understand the frustration that...
But wait, no, this is on a different chipset altogether. This is on an LGA 1120. 1200 socket, damn it. Anyway, you need a 490 series board, and yeah, you're gonna need a different motherboard to use it, because it's not pin compatible with the older
Intel. This is why people hate Intel.
Yeah,
that their shit is not backwards compatible, and even if they are, 3 months down the line, AMD is gonna come out with shit far cheaper than this.
Yeah, but this generation, if you forget the high-end stuff, some of their mid-range offerings are actually pretty decent, and...
I agree, but it's just that AMD just comes and just, you know, undercut them every single time.
Yeah, but then again, I mean, this is new territory for Intel, because they've never been on the back foot in the last 20 years. So with this series, it's clear that they're making a few changes. For one thing, the base entry-level i3 also has hyper-threading. And that would have been unheard of like 5 years ago.
On AMD.
So,
yeah,
they are making a few changes. It's more affordable. It lines up well against AMD's entry-level offerings. So, and again, let's not forget, Intel still has a sizable market share. So there are fans who will be looking to upgrade.
I am one of them. I genuinely like Intel products. I just hate the fact that AMD undercuts them. I just don't like AMD products for some reason. I'm just not a big fan of their products. I mean, I've heard they've done some great stuff over the years, but I just tend to gravitate towards Intel. I don't know why. It's just me. It's always been Intel for me.
I don't know. It's like that for me too. I've always been with Intel and Nvidia, but I like AMD for some reason, just because it's like the underdog. It's been the underdog for so long. And they're finally seeing some...
Yeah.
They're pulling some punches against...
Of course, you always root for the underdog. I agree with you. But I don't know, man. It's just like Intel is Intel, I guess. We've grown up to that.
Yeah. It's not the same as...
Although...
What it used to be.
Although they're calling it the most powerful gaming processor.
Yeah, that's bullshit. That's absolute horseshit. Like, this is...
Harish,
this is again...
Harish with the lowdown.
I don't understand these sort of marketing claims, because it's just pointless. It's not... Sure, it may be for about 10 seconds in a game that no one plays. Yeah, it'll be the best gaming processor the world has ever seen. But not for most of us. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't get it. I mean, the i9-10900K, weird naming aside, looks pretty decent. It has a lot of decent games over the 9900K. And a lot of folks are looking to upgrade. So it has tangible things to offer.
I'm looking at the press release. I think they haven't really come out with the mid-ranger ones, right? As of
no.
now? They're going to come out later,
they
right?
Did.
They're going to come out later.
They have the...
They announced
yeah.
it. They announced it, but it's going on sale later.
Yeah.
Right?
They've had issues with selling and meeting demand for these things for, I don't know, 2 quarters now. So let's see when these things finally show up on the market, eh?
Yeah, I mean, if I get a review on it, I first need a motherboard that goes.
Yeah, same. I was thinking that it would be pin compatible, but even then, I would have needed
a
different board.
Yeah. Upgrading PCs is a pain, which is why Dhruv is a console gamer.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
pretty much.
Hey,
to be fair,
it's easier than it used to be.
It's way easier, way easier, but still very complicated.
Dhruv, sorry, you were saying something.
Yeah, for me, it's just about, you know, the constantly having to keep up with things. I used to be, I was never much of a PC gamer, but I used to be into PC components quite a bit, but then after a while it just becomes too much work, you know, when you've got other hobbies as well. It just becomes too hard to keep up with all of that, and it's such a money sink if you just want to be you know, on the bleeding edge of stuff. At this point in my life, I'm more than happy with console gaming. I've got so many other things going on that I just want to put in my disc. I still buy physical copies, switch on my console, and that's it. Sit back and play a game. That's it. I don't want anything else.
I made my baby. That's when I met Dhruv for the first time, by the way, in New York. I made my baby as a wedding present to myself, to be honest. I got married just a month before and got a lot of... how do you say it in English, Dhruv? What do you say? What do you call that money? Wedding money. Let's just say wedding money. And I set some aside for my gaming PC that I always wanted to build. And I'm not gonna upgrade it at least for the next 3 more years or maybe 4 more years. But what Harish just said, it's kind of tempting. I want to upgrade that processor. But now, if I want to upgrade that processor, I have to spend extra money on the motherboard as well. And that's going to end up costing me a shit tons more. And this is where it's like getting into fucking cars that end up running you bills every month. It's just like that.
See, that's where it starts. Like, and then you'll want to upgrade to faster RAM and, like, you know, a faster SSD.
Exactly. I mean, I already got 32 gigs. I don't think I'll need more right now, but eventually, yes.
So that's the thing. You don't need to be on the bleeding edge. I tried to do this too until 2015. And then I was like, I didn't see the point behind it, because at that time I used to review hardware. So I used to have a lot of video cards and motherboards show up. And it was a weekly thing to switch out and upgrade internals on the gaming machine.
Yeah, but that's reviewness, right? Everyone don't get access to those stuff every week, right? They have to buy once and just stick with it.
So that's when I realized that you don't need to be on the bleeding edge. I'm still running a 4th gen Haswell build. It's unlocked, so it goes to 4.4 gigahertz. And that's more than enough, actually. I mean, it still runs plenty.
For now, it is. It's just tempting because, you know, when you hear of new shit, and especially the three of us, when we hear about new shit, we want it, right?
Yeah.
Whatever floats our boat, we want it right away. And, you know, you can see Harish's eyes sparkle when he hears a new Xiaomi lifestyle product. Similarly, I want a nice processor that, you know, and then whatever. But Intel's coming out with a GPU as well later in the year. They're rumored to come out with their own GPU. Maybe this year or next year. So I don't know what's
judging
Intel's
by
plan.
How their timelines are looking right now, it's going to be next year.
They don't know. Yeah, it's going to be next year. But I want to see how all of these work together, you know, cohesively.
Yeah, but in terms of like just the broader hardware scene, you're looking at an upfront cost of probably a lakh and a half when you're building your own machine. But you also have to think about the fact that you don't need to upgrade this thing for 4 or 5 years or more than that. And when
I did a quick cost check on building a PC sometime last week, you know, a gaming PC with a 2080 and et cetera, et cetera. Like all the trimmings. And it was coming to about 1.7 to 1.8 lakh rupees.
Right.
Which is a substantial sum of money. And
it is.
Like, and most people do still, you know, I mean, at least for me, I would still need to have a laptop on hand because I travel when I'm working. I have to travel for work. Sometimes I'm just not there at my workstation, etc., etc. You know, we need a portable...
Sometimes you just want to sit on a couch and write.
Yeah, sometimes I just want to sit on the couch and write. At that end, and like say, even if it's a basic 60, 70,000 rupee laptop, we're already at... 2.5 2.5 lakh rupees for a machine to work and game on. Why would I not just buy a decent enough laptop and get a console? Which costs
me. It just sucks.
Here's the thing.
I agree with you.
I've heard this argument so many times. Here's what I say. To get a notebook that will play a decent amount of games, you need at least like a 2060 or a 2070. Yeah. And for that to fit into a notebook, you're going to get one of these big fucking bulky things. And
you know,
instead of that,
absolutely. I agree with you. No, where I'm coming from is that, you know, sure, you can build a huge gaming rig, but it's not as if for a lot of people, it's going to be the only computing machine that they'll have, right? My argument for that is that, especially with the next gen of consoles, and for that matter, like, personally, even with something like a PlayStation 4 Pro or the Xbox One X, the graphics are pretty damn good. I'm playing sitting on a couch or on my bed on a 16-inch screen. I'm not pixel peeping. Heck, I mean, 4K 60 FPS, that's good enough. I mean, sure, there'll be that audience which wants the 144Hz displays like you, Akshay. But come on, that's not the overwhelming majority today.
I agree. My main issue with consoles and why I never use my Xbox One. Games on consoles cost a lot more than games do on Windows.
PC?
Yeah, and that not difference
alone.
It turns out to be the same, man, because the kind of money you spend on the hardware offsets the cost of games you buy on console. It turns out to be the same. And it depends how many games you want to play. If you're playing, let's say, 2 to 3 games a year on a console, it turns out to be cheaper.
Yeah.
If you're playing shitloads of games, then the PC turns out to be cheaper.
Undala.
It depends on what kind of gamer you are, to be honest. If you are like me, and I fucking play games from 4 p.m. to 4 a.m., legit, that's what I've been happening for the past 3 weeks. I need to have all of them. I have all the consoles. I have the PC as well, because that's the one thing that was missing in my life. But I'm not the core audience, right? I am the core audience. I'm not the mass audience. And mass audiences just get one console and play, or one PC and play the game. The only problem with PC is that they don't have good exclusives. That's the only issue.
Yeah, but then to play devil's advocate to my own reasoning, 1.8 lakhs is like a fuck ton of money, man.
Yeah, it depends. Again, it depends on the kind of gamer you are. You can wait a few years, play a triple game, let's say 2 years after its release, and you'll get it for $300 on Steam.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, the argument that you made, Harish, that, you know, you won't have to upgrade for the next 5 years, that argument only works if you actually build a top-of-the-line rig today. If you're building a mid-range rig today, you will need to upgrade in 2 to 3 years.
I'll tell you what, being a tech enthusiast in India sucks, which is the reason why, Dhruv, you remember, I bought shitloads of PC parts from US.
Yeah.
It's just more affordable outside here. The import duties, I mean, it's fucking 28% import, or 18% import duty on just fucking monitors, man. It just gets costlier in India when you're trying to build a PC. Of course, abroad, it's a lot cheaper, but it's still more expensive than consoles. But it's just more plausible to build a gaming PC, let's say, in other regions of the world than India.
Yeah.
India is just not the market for it. That's the problem.
That's true.
If we get rid of the taxes, then the playing field will be quite level.
But then where will the government get its money from?
They'll have to force people to manufacture in India or something, man. I don't know what they'll have to figure it out.
I don't know if you guys know about this, but I think it was over a decade ago. Intel was actually considering India as one of its locations for its fabs, because Intel has a lot of facilities in India for where most of its software teams are based out of. But then they ran into a lot of issues with the government. It would have been a pretty sizable investment too. I think it was over $5 or $10 billion at the time. And that was meant to be one of the biggest foreign investments in India. But then it fell through because Intel guys took one look at the bureaucracy here and they're like, no thanks, we're going to Israel. So now Israel has one of Intel's largest fabs.
Imagine that.
That's crazy.
Well, I mean, I think the market has partnered up in India. Now they want people to come in, and maybe, I don't know how it works now, to be honest. I don't know how political systems work in terms of business. So maybe we might see some improvements from other players at least.
Yeah.
But yeah, being a PC gamer sucks in India, man. If you have the money, great for you. If you don't, you travel outside.
I mean, like, before we move on to the next topic, I think just like from a personal point of view, it's not even a money thing for me. It's just the sheer convenience. You know, that entire sit back couch experience for gaming, because I don't play competitively, I don't stream. For me, it is supposed to be a relaxing experience. So I want to take away from the entire, you know, take away all the extraneous stuff and just focus on the gaming. And a console just delivers that.
As I said, it depends on the type of player.
Absolutely. Yeah, and also you can do that too. I mean, I play all games on the TV. I just use the Shield or Steam Link and then just use an Xbox One controller and play on the TV. And
Cool. I think we should move on to the next topic. We could keep going back.
This is a never ending argument. It's been going on for the past 15 years, and it's never gonna stop. So yeah. Let's just get on with it.
All right. Let's get go. Okay. Wow. Our next topic is actually kind of out there. Are you guys fans of the X-Files?
Wait. Oh shit. Oh, we are talking about this. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Of course we are.
Little green aliens.
The truth is out there. Man.
Cool. So, well, the Pentagon has declassified a couple of videos and they've got UFOs in them. Yeah, well, that's the first US government confirmation we have of UFOs.
Yeah, well, I mean, they didn't even admit to Area 51 existing until a few years ago, let alone confirming a video.
Area 51 exists. We just don't know what exists inside it. It's just like, you know, experimental aircraft or whatever.
It's an unidentified flying object. It could be from another government. It could be from one of their secret projects. It could be from outer space. We just don't know.
It could be Will Smith.
It's called a UFO. It could. You never know, man, what the hell it is. But it is kind of a big deal when Department of Defense of the US government says, yes, this is a real video, it's not a fake video, yes, that is a UFO, and yes, we have it in our possession. It's kind of a big deal admitting to that.
Wait, just to clarify that, they have the video in their possession, right? Not the UFO.
Not the UFO, the video.
I'm sure they
it was captured by Navy UFOs, pilots. Right? It was, okay, so I'll tell you the story. It was captured in 2004, the video, not the UFO. The video of the UFO was captured in 2004 by Navy pilots, and then it was suppressed for a while, and the New York Times leaked the videos 2 years ago, and now Pentagon, during the coronavirus pandemic, has decided to say, yes, it exists. So it's kind of like, yeah, the world is coming to an end.
Yeah, great timing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually smart of them to do that now. But anyway,
yeah, but
fun fact, so I'm a huge military aviation nut, and I think most of the times when you see a UFO, as they're dubbed, it's probably just like the next version of whatever drone is in service.
So, which is why I knew you were going to say this, because I see your SR-81, what's 71. It called, the plane? 71 t-shirts, and I knew you were going to say that shit. So, there's an article by ABC News, not an article, an interview of retired Commander David Frever. And he said that, and he was the head of the secrets program in the Pentagon. Okay, he said, I can tell you, I think it was not from this world. I'm not crazy. Haven't been drinking. It was after 18 years of flying. I've seen pretty much about everything that I can see in that realm. And this was nothing close. I have never seen anything in my life, in my history of flying, that has the performance, the acceleration. And keep in mind, this had no wings.
Yeah.
This is the head of the secret programs at Pentagon saying.
Obviously, they're going to say that, right? That was the same stuff that they did in the 60s and 70s when the SR-71 was still in commission and it was still classified top secret. They're obviously going to say this is something that we've never seen before.
And then he says, these aircraft, we'll call them aircraft, are displaying characteristics that are not currently within the US inventory, nor in any foreign inventory that we are aware of. He closed off the interview with that.
Yeah, that's the usual MO that they do.
I mean,
but it's a big deal, man.
It is, but you know, also there's just a lot of crazy, underground military tech that's going around. So, you know, you never really know. I mean, just to give you some perspective, I was reading up about some drones the other day, and there's this thing called the Black Hornet by Fleur. Evidently, it costs like $80,000. It's a tiny, tiny piece of kit. Like, the entire drone is just 10 centimeters. And it has a battery life of 20 minutes, which is crazy. That's like most DJI drones do like 25 minutes. And they are like way larger than this. So this drone, this entire drone fits in the palm of your hands, of your hand, goes about 2 kilometers, top speed of about 20 kilometers per hour, which is just crazy. And it's doing nearly full HD real-time video. So it's being like aimed towards soldiers, like comes in its own battery pack, that you could just wear around your belt. But that's the thing, right? Like, there's these crazy battery technologies, crazy aerodynamics that are being tested out. I don't know why the government decided to talk about this one or, you know, reveal this video as a UFO video. But yeah, like this, just a lot of crazy stuff going around.
I can guarantee you that in the warehouses of Lockheed Martin, the Skunk Works, whatever the hell they call it, they have some shit that looks out of this world, but it's made here. That's for sure. I can guarantee that much to you. They're just not going to admit. They're not going to show it to the public, of course. But I think the Blackbird was also made by them, and people thought it was out of the world. And when it was first unveiled, if you look at, you know, from afar, it looks like a UFO,
yep,
right?
It does. I've seen several of those in person, and it's insane. They look nothing that is made by humans.
Even the next version of that also looks quite crazy. That was used in the Kuwait War. It looked like a fucking UFO.
There wasn't a next version of the 71. Well, there must be, but it's classified. So.
It's a... Yeah, no, that stealth plane they had, I forget what was it called.
Oh, the X-44?
I think so.
They have a whole squadron of stealth now because, well, they need to. They fight a lot of wars.
Well, but man, but it's just surprising that they just came out with this video. And there have been a lot of conspiracy theories in the past 70 years since the first UFO sighting, all the way from
Roswell.
What was that place called? Roswell to Bob Lazar. And Bob Lazar is the only guy I actually believe, because he has some legit shit that he has spoken about. He worked at Area 51, that's what he claims, and he's literally shown on live TV that, hey, look up there, that's where the UFO is going to come at this time, and it actually showed up live on TV. So I believe him, but I don't know about the rest of it.
But then that's
just
that,
because...
Yeah, that kind of points to, you know, like him being privy to some military exercise, you know, more than a UFO.
That's what people say. Predetermined times. That's just how it works. Like, they're in the middle of the Nevada... desert, there's nothing there for hundreds of miles, so they run these things every day.
Yeah, but he's a physicist who works there. All his records got deleted, and he said that I worked on these things, and this is the time we test our flights, because on Wednesdays there's the least amount of traffic there, which is why he said that's when we test it. So the location where he shot the video and showed it on live TV is now blocked off by the US government because of that telecast, by the way. So it's kind of weird, man. We're getting into conspiracy realm, but with UFO, it comes.
Fun fact about the whole acceleration thing and all that you mentioned. So the SR-71 it didn't have any defense systems on board, and it was on enemy territory all the time. So the only thing it did to when missiles were launched was just outrun them. Yeah, it regularly outran missiles.
So it was the B-2 Spirit that looks like a UFO to me.
Oh, that's old.
That's the one.
Wait, that was the B-2.
Yeah, that's old, but that looked, and the Nighthawk as well.
Yeah.
No, so yeah. Oh well, that was the biggest. Those were the biggest news. It was the biggest news for me. I did that story, to be honest, and I got shit tons of clicks on it, and which is why I was like, we should talk about it in the podcast, because you never know. There are a lot of people who believe in UFOs, man. Fair question. Do you guys believe in UFOs?
No.
Or alien technology?
I'd like to believe that there's something out there.
You'd like to. Yeah, Harish, you don't,
no,
right?
I've read enough sci-fi to know that they won't come talk to us primitive human beings with our squabbles and all this religious nonsense.
Well, I believe.
I've even got a little green man on my desk, see, all the time. Right here.
Yeah, the classic green man with fucking...
I have a Niffler digging for gold, so make of that what you will.
I have Princess Leia half naked.
Okay. Oh, I have Yoda.
Well, technically, she's also an alien, isn't she?
From
a galaxy far, far away.
A planet that no longer exists.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. So I guess that pretty much wraps up what we had for this week, doesn't it?
What a way to end the podcast, huh? With the UFO story.
Yeah. We should do one dedicated to UFOs.
Yeah, we'll probably pull up all the plausible conspiracy theories.
Legit stories.
We should do a series on conspiracy theories.
Oh my God.
We can do that.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like we have anything better to do than just lockdown after work, right?
Yeah, I think we're sort of running out of content ideas now.
I mean, kind of, you're not, man. People are fucking their shit up every week. Last week it was Huawei, this week it was Xiaomi. Next week, I don't know who's going to fuck it up.
Samsung is like, okay, we haven't gotten any press in a while. Let's do some dumb shit.
To be fair, when this lockdown started, I was like, fuck, what am I going to write about? Everything's going to be shut. But I've had enough content every day, man, to be honest, to write about.
There's never going to be shortage of content to write.
So, Akshay, do you have a quiz for us?
Yeah, who's going to fuck up next week?
My money... Wait, what are we on? 2nd May. My money is on Samsung. I just feel it, man.
Just feel it.
I think Xiaomi is going to drop the ball on the messaging, and this might become slightly bigger than it already is.
Yeah,
that's my bet. What do you think?
I have a feeling that OnePlus might do something because the phones are going to start selling, and you know, we are if the courier services are opening up, we're going to get the review units, and I'm pretty sure something's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, somebody's gonna do some dumb shit with their phones and lockdown.
Probably the camera reviewer. I'm gonna call out people whoever said this is a great camera. I'm gonna call them out if it's bad.
Give it a fair shot first.
I said if it's bad.
All right, so I guess that's it for this week. We'll have this episode up faster than usual. We're really sorry about pushing the previous episodes a bit late, but yeah. You know, things are not that normal, and we got caught up with stuff. Catch you with the next episode next week then. Cheers.
Bye.
See you guys.